Lay.
Sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kane is in the building.
Yeah. Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the thunder? Just remember when you come up. The show goes on.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, previewing the 2022 RBC Heritage, a week after the Masters. It's lots of fun golf chat to talk about. Hey, we might have next week off, too, so thumbs up there.
Well,
where?
Go ahead.
No. Well, do we have that? That's Jesse over there, by the way, at DFS Golf Gods. You said, well, like, what do we got?
I think they had it last year. I thought they had Zurich, yeah, last year. And it was just like, everybody's, you know, was the same price as their teammate, I think.
Oh, I think you're right. I think you are correct now that you
But there's only it. Like 30. How many teams are there? 30?
Yeah, it's not many, and it was very complicated to do. I know I was not a fan, let's put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how good it is. It will be for like podcast purposes, but I think there is something next week at least.
All right. Well, we might have something to talk about then to annoy people with, so we can have some fun with that. How's everything else going? How was Masters week for you?
It was pretty good. You know, being on heavily Scheffler and Cam Smith, obviously, I didn't lose money. It wasn't as good as I would have hoped. My main lineup, I had Van Rooyen in there. The very first lineup I made was the same exact lineup, except for I had Kevin Na. And it would have been worth a lot more money, but as it was, man, it was fun. It was awesome to watch. Did you get to watch a lot?
I got to watch a decent amount, which was nice. That's for sure. But yeah, I wanted to watch more. Let's put it that way. But it was great. I got to see a lot of the Sunday action for sure. Got to see some of the fun, just craziness with the wind. And I've watched a lot of golf. I know I haven't watched a ton as awesome as I'd like lately, but I've watched a pretty good amount of golf, I think. I guess if we just haven't seen Scheffler that consistently. That swing is ridiculous.
I had this chat with a bunch of buddies of mine. I mean, like, his swing is not fun to watch. It's not like Rory McIlroy swinging the golf club. Like, no. if I could swing like one person in the world right now, it'd probably be Rory McIlroy. I would not pick Scottie Scheffler. And how he makes it work, I don't know. But he's a fucking magician around the greens. He's got really, really good touch. And can putt lights out and doesn't get rattled. When they went to three and both him and Cam Smith hit it way left, I don't know if you saw that or not, but of course he got a drop, him being Scottie Scheffler, because there's a big ass scoreboard right there, which I think is horseshit, but it's beside the point. So he gets a drop, then he chunks it, then Cam chunks it, then he chips it in. It's just like, dude. Good night. Yeah. It's over with, you know.
Yep. It was pretty rough for Cam per se. But yeah. It was crazy though, just to watch like the shots he'd hit, even on that the Saturday when it was looked like he might have been kind of falling back a bit. And he's, you know, in the pine straw. I think it was 18 when he was like so far away. They're like, I'll just punch it out here. And he freaking puts it on the green and just puts like it was just ridiculous the shots he'd make. And I guess it's just, you know, playing in Texas in the wind, you just know how to like do goofy stuff. But it was pretty wild to see it all take place.
He hits it a mile. I mean, they were, you know, especially on that shot on 18 Saturday, pull hooks it into the worst possible spot on the whole entire golf course. Let's be honest. Finds it, gets the relief to, you know, to, and then like everybody's like, well, just, you know, throw it up there to the top of the hill to where you got a nice little wedge in. This dude's like, no, I'm just going to put it like literally like land it perfectly where it should be landed. And of course, the greens are hard. So it rolls over the back, gets up and down, makes a bogey. When he's like anybody else, you know, I mean, that's talking to my buddies again, but you know, if I'm hitting that shot, I'm hitting three wood, I'm slipping in the pine straw, I'm topping it about 20 yards up the hill, probably back into the bushes and making an eight, you know, this dude, but I mean, they're way better than, but it's just, yeah, it's crazy to watch. And then, when he got to, 15 on Sunday, and Dottie and the rest of them were talking about him. I'll just, you know, pick you a good number to lay up. And dude's behind the trees and just hits a rope hook around the trees, just barely over the green. I mean, he made birdie. No, he made par there because he missed the putt. But still, I mean, Like, that's just fucking amazing to me.
Yeah, he made shot after shot. Every time you think he was going to let someone back in the tournament, he has, like, made two shots in a row to make you think, oh, no, no, that's not happening. And his kudos and the run he's been on is ridiculous. Even Tiger, like, giving him kudos. Like, well, what's Tiger supposed to say? But still, he pretty much gave him some nice props, kind of a half in, half out, making fun of, you know, the run he was on type thing. If you really think about it, he's like, I haven't seen a run like that before. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We haven't. This is shorter than yours. Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. But like, actually several years in a row, but yeah, whatever.
Exactly. So that was impressive to see Scotty. And it was funny because he admitted it after the fact, but I was watching, my dad came down to visit on Saturday for a little bit. We were watching golf and I said, man, you know, Scheffler's running away with it. I'd honestly hate to be Scheffler right now, because I think he'd rather have like a one or two shot lead or be playing from like one or two shots back, thinking, okay, I got to play, instead of just like, I can't screw up. Like that mindset, I can't screw up because it's given to me right now. And he came out and talked about it. He said that Sunday morning, he was like melting down going, this is, and you could see it early on. And then he kind of got back in his groove, but
yeah,
it can't be that easy. Like, even though the best of the best, that's a tough space to be in, especially in Augusta.
No, I mean, like the stone cold worst place to have the lead into Sunday is probably, you know, Augusta National, especially getting on the backside there with 10's difficult, 11's hard. Then, of course, you got 12. 13's not like – you can fuck up on that. I mean, he about did on Saturday when he – I think he slipped or something and just pushed that shot way to the right and ended up way over there in a safe spot. But and he gets up and down, makes birdie. But either way, I mean, dude – dude's just unconscious right now. Cam Smith obviously playing really well. Rory had a hell of a day on Sunday. That fucking chip in on 18
out of the bunker.
Yeah, and him and Morikawa back to back. Yeah, that's just it's just nuts, dude. But yeah, I mean, you know, it ended up being like, especially once the kind of obviously on Sunday the weather was the best day of the whole entire week. The weather clears up, scoring gets a little bit better, and the cream rises to the top, right? Because, I mean, obviously, Rory, you know, goes bogey-free, shoots 65 or whatever, 64, whatever he shot, 64. And then Lowry played well. Morikawa came up there, and Sal Torres. JT had a better day. He was kind of, you know, up and down all week. But, yeah, I mean, another great tournament. I didn't move off the couch from basically Thursday to Sunday evening.
I was jealous of people like you. I really was. I truly was. I was telling people I had like had my iPad in my truck with it on. Like, obviously, I'm not sitting there staring at it while I'm driving, but at least I could listen to it, or if I, you know, could watch it from time to time. It's great.
I also had my iPad on with the TV on, so I'm watching like Amen Corner in 15 and 16 while this TV coverage is going on, and then like, so I'm seeing the shot, and then 5 minutes later they're showing it on TV. Which is tilting to no end. And oh my God, dude, how do we not have feature holes 1 through 3 yet?
How do we not have what DirecTV used to have? Like, it was one of the gold standards of Masters coverage.
I don't know. I just want feature holes 1 through 3 because I want to see the dudes start and then play number 2 and number 3 because they're both difficult. Typically, well, they're both gettable. You can birdie both of them. One is difficult, and that kind of sets the tone for how your dude's going to play. But yeah, that's my only gripe about the coverage. I went back and watched so many shots. Like, that's the fucking awesome thing about it. Like, if I'm following a guy, like I played a lot of Billy Horschel and Max Homa, who shot like 1,000 over on the weekend. So they were out early, and I went back and I got to watch every single of their terrible shots on the weekend.
And that's why the app's so great too. Yeah, literally great, you can sit and watch everything if you're doing something that comes in handy. And I want to get back to this in a second, but you mentioned Billy Horschel, and I meant to text you, but that just reminded me. So I listen to the Pat McAfee show a lot.
Yeah.
And the guy so the guy Ty, who's a very sarcastic dude that likes to, you know, I feel a lot of what Ty says sometimes. I get it.
Gotcha.
But I guess he tweeted something one time because Billy Ho was just slow playing. It basically was something about Billy Horschel, slow play, blah, blah, blah. Didn't at him, nothing. Similar to your story. Next thing he knows, he's blocked by Billy Horschel.
Nope.
So if you listen to McAfee, if you don't, go to the Friday show. He's got a rant about William Horschel. That was one of the funnier things you'll ever hear. And I just pictured Jesse the whole time. So I'm like, I'm blocked by this guy. I didn't even do anything wrong. I'm just blocked by this guy. And here we are. So
yeah, I mean,
it was funny.
I guarantee this podcast is blocked somehow by Billy Horschel. But yeah, just don't, you don't even have to add him. He'll just figure it out and block you if you mention his name on Twitter at all. But yeah, he had a disappointing weekend. So did Homa. Those are kind of my two big disappointments for the week. Otherwise, it was a really good week for me because I was really high on Scheffler and Smith, and ended up playing 150 lineups, and I had half of them with both Scheffler and Smith. So I felt pretty good about it.
Yeah, I did my 20 max. I had half Scheffler and Smith as well. And before Smith fell backwards on Sunday, I was feeling real good about life.
Yeah.
Like I had six sixes out of my 20. They were all Smith, Scheffler, basically. It was like, okay, let's dance. And it still was a winning week.
That fucking six on 12 hurt, dude.
Exactly. Because I was doing something with my daughter on Sunday, and I was checking my phone, and he's like 200 or whatever to start the day, and I'm looking like, let's go, let's do this. Like,
he birdied the first two holes.
Yeah. Then I was doing something. I come back and check the phone. I see he's like one over or two over, and I see my DK thing. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. No, it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, it didn't help that Rory and Zalatoris went off when everybody played them. So,
right,
combo effect. But it was fun. It was fun. And course history wins again on a lot of dudes like Cam Champ.
They did.
Schwartzels, Willits, those guys, crazy stuff.
Do you have any thoughts on the changes? Like as far as like how difficult 15 was and how difficult 11 was this year?
It did definitely challenge them a ton more. Like they had to like hit it to certain spots, lengthen things out. It was you could see it wasn't the kind of like, let's just go hit it over here and do what we got to do thing. It was even more strategy, I guess, on what clubs they were hitting, which made it much, much more different. You watched a lot more of it than I did, so you probably had a better feel.
I like the change to 11. I think it's one of the hardest holes all year, no matter what. 15, it kind of sucks just for, like, comeback purposes. The big problem with 15 all week is, or at least early on, was it was playing into the wind.
That makes it real tough.
Makes it real tough. You're hitting your tee shot in the wind, then you're hitting your second shot in the wind. And so there was a lot of laying up, and it's not an easy green to even hit with a wedge once you do lay up, because typically you got a downhill lie, you're hitting onto a green, and you got to hit a tabletop. So it's really difficult. From that perspective, as far as it played a little bit easier, I think, on Sunday. So I think like it won't be too awful much more difficult. But the scoring was fine to me, and it played hard. But Scotty really showed out, shooting really 12 under and four putting the last hole for 10 under.
I saw a lot of people, again, this is where me listening to McAfee all the time, but he had the winning score by four or better.
Oh, God.
That's why I love McAfee, because he'll talk about his losses, and he never said a bad thing about Scotty, but he was more like, Scotty, hey buddy, just one of those.
That's the only reason it matters, is because of that exact bet. Like otherwise, it doesn't matter. But yeah, that would be tilting.
So there's just so much fun stuff when it comes to the majors, and especially the Masters. And there's a lot of other stuff, like, Harry Higgs, one spot out from an automatic berth next year. Now he's got to work his butt off. Almost had the Albatross that would have got him in there.
Yeah,
that was a shot that could have been a shot for the decades type thing. that's definitely one that he would have remembered for the rest of his life. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So a lot of storylines. Again, this is kind of how our preview went. We could probably talk Masters forever. Yep. Do you have any final thoughts or any takeaways? Because we already found out that we're heading to the Open pretty soon, the U.S. Open, and that is Scheffler's favorite golf course.
Yeah. I hope everybody fades him again, dude. I was surprised how low he was.
Did you see my tweet? Like, I was trying not to be a dick, but I was like, because every show you listen to, it's like, I'm going to pay $200 or $300 left and play Jon Rahm. Well, why pay up for Scottie Scheffler? And I'm like, well, because he's the number one player in the world. Just going to throw it out there. And Jon Rahm can't putt right now. And
I feel like, with a lot of DFS, it's just overthinking and trying to be different. I don't know. I mean, like, this year I've just decided to play a lot of the guys who are playing well. I mean,
bingo.
And Scheffler has finished top 20 in the last six majors.
Exactly.
I don't know, man. I hope he keeps it up. He's quickly becoming one of my favorite golfers.
I just love how I'll still never forget it, because we've been on Scheff for a long time. I'm not going to say we're the Scheffler podcast, but we've loved Scheffler, because I'll never forget how we tilted the shit out of that plus eight to minus eight and missing the cut by one stroke. I will never forget that moment.
100%. Yeah, I forgot what happened on that Thursday, but
Yeah.
Whatever it was, because we were heavy.
We were heavy on him that week. So,
he's just got it going. And if you haven't seen it, I do highly recommend going and watching the Club Pro Guy swing analysis with Scotty Scheffler. It's pretty funny.
That'll be good. That'll be gold. And I'm ready for Scotty to make some interview tours, because he's not shy, but he's a humble guy. So, but you get him, like, I've heard him on like Foreplay with the Barstool guys and stuff, and he opens up a little bit. Pretty funny stuff. So there's a funny guy in there, and you got to get him on the right show, and you're gonna start liking him even more. Is what I'm trying to say. So
I'm with you.
Down to earth type of dude, and we will get to him. He's not playing this week, though. Good for him. He needs to take a few weeks off. Like, go chill. You've only made like $15 million in like the last 6 weeks. So I'm exaggerating, but maybe not based on sponsors, I'm guessing. So just go do what you got. Oh, last question I have. My dad and I are trying to figure this out on Saturday. And maybe this is just me being silly, because I did it yesterday. It was windier than shit here. Like, ridiculous. We were the only three people on the golf course. And my truck said 62. With the wind, it had to be like low 50s at least, and I'm in shorts and a long sleeve. I'm out there walking, doing my thing on Saturday. First off, these guys act like they're in a goddamn blizzard where they're dressed up, which made me laugh. Like, all the temperatures said like 55 to 65. I'm like, you guys are a bunch of little.
Well, it was I did hear from a dude who was on the golf course that it was cold.
Okay,
it was nice. Like really cold. I don't know if it was
walking that much, you should be staying warm, you'd think.
I'm not going to disagree with you. Like, I've played a lot of golf, especially in Kentucky this spring, this quote unquote spring, mm-hmm. and it's not been fucking warm. And I didn't have to have like I don't know what the hell Colin Morikawa was wearing, but
yes, they were having like
where he was putting it up over his head. It was COVID.
They had the things to put over there. Yeah, it was, but yeah,
I thought that was a bit much, but
the reason I'm asking is, so Scheffler would hit his shots. In between walking to the balls, he'd put a vest on, But my question to you is, and you probably don't know the answer, but it's fun to discuss for 2 seconds. I told my dad, I guarantee you that Nike called and said, "Hey, dude, we got these golf vests that we're trying to sell. You're in the final grouping of Augusta. All eyeballs on you. Here's an extra blank amount of dollars. Make sure you put this on while you're walking, because they're gonna show you all the time."
I would say it's possible. I felt like it was a bit overkill taking it off and putting it back on.
Because no one else was doing it. No one.
Yeah. 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 And I don't know. I mean, like, obviously, these guys are a different level than I am, but I can swing fine. Like, I know JT was bitching about it after Saturday about how he couldn't swing or whatever. But like, you just figure it out, man. I don't know.
But, yeah, it's like the old saying, when a course is in bad shape or whatever happens, well, we're all playing the same course. We're all playing in the same weather, so figure it out. Like,
yep. Yeah.
It was, but okay, we'll move on. Like I said, it was fun. I wish I would have watched more, but I watched plenty. It was good to see. And now we got the RBC Heritage at Harbortown, which I actually enjoy this tournament. I really do. It's a fun Pete Dye course, and we actually have a pretty good field. So why don't you give us a little past event history on this one?
Yeah, last year – Stuart Sink won this golf tournament for the third time, shot 19 under, four shots over Griot and HV3, who had a good week last week, by the way.
Yes, he did.
Webb Simpson was the 2020 winner, 22 under, which is the tournament record, one shot over Answer. CT Pan was the winner in 2019, 12 under, one shot over Kuchar. Kadira, 12 under, 2018 playoff over Siwoo. 2017 was Wesley Bryan, 13 under, one shot over Luke Donald. Jim Furyk won this a couple times. Kuchar, Graham McDowell, Snedeker. That's about it.
All right. A wide range of types of players there. But one thing that's true is you don't have to be a long ball hitter here. It's only 7,120 yards, par 71, Harbortown Golf Course. It's a fun one. Hilton Head, South Carolina. So it's not too far away from Augusta. I think it's a couple hours, they said. So it's an easy trip for some of these guys that made the voyage. You get 4 par 3s, 11 par 4s, 3 par 5s, so one less par 5. And I mentioned it is a Pete Dye course, Bermuda Greens, but a Pete Dye course. So as you know, there's Pete Dye specialists. You'll hear that all week. And it's one of those courses that makes you hit to certain spots because it's like either visually intimidating or you just have to because he puts a lot of roadblocks in the way. And that's how this course works. The fairways are rather easy to hit. The rough's usually not too penal. There are a lot of trees out there, but you got to really be spraying stuff to get there. There's also water on 18 of the holes. If you do a quick math, that's every hole. But they're not like, it's not just obvious. It's not like playing, you know, PGA National or something where the water's right in your face. You got to kind of find it on most of them. Some of them, not so much. Like one of the last par threes, it's right off the green. That could be trouble. But overall, it's all about a second shot course. It's less than driver for the most part. Someone's like, I think I heard somewhere it's like the average driving distance is around 265, which is very low on tour. The greens are super small. The only smaller greens on tour is Pebble Beach. So you're going to have to be able to scramble. So it's all about if you can approach shot, greens and reg, potentially it's scrambling. It'll be pretty darn big in this one. A lot of your approach shots will be like 150 to 200, 175 to 200, give or take. The par threes are all 175 to 200. So if you get that kind of dialed in, you'll be doing pretty well. Also, let me see what else did I have on my yeah, that's about it. And majority, I think 7 of the 11 par fours are 400 to 450. So if you want to put that in your models as well, that could be another angle to look at. But it's not a bomber's course. It's a second shot course. It's a scramble your butt off course and get hot. That's why the Stu Goat, that's why these older guys can play here. It makes it much more doable. What are you looking at this week?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's accuracy and scrambling. Greens regulation does matter. And then, you know, birdie or better typically, you know, is what I would focus on.
Yeah, the par fives are the ones you got to nail. That's for sure. For, you know, 51% birdie rate on the second hole par five, 44% on the fifth, and then 26% on the par five, 15th. Not a ton of eagles though, because like Pete Dye, he makes you lay up because there's water here, or there's a bunkers here, or there's a lot of strategy with Pete Dye, and that's why these guys can do so well with their shot shaping approaches. But let's just get cracking on it. Let's talk about the DK picks on this slate. And again, loaded field, pretty look for this event. You have
it's a really good field for what it typically is.
And Abe Answer has withdrawn, so it kind of took one more. But I want to say there's like, I want to say 11 in the top 20, not 9 in the top 20, something like that. I read it earlier. I should have kept it up, but pretty loaded field. But five players, 10K and above. JT is 11-1, Cam Smith 10-8, DJ 10-5, Morikawa 10-2, and Patrick Cantlay 10,000. Honestly, I can't even tell you what Patrick Cantlay did in Augusta because I don't remember hearing his name at all last week. I think he missed the cut, if I remember
correctly. No, he made the cut.
See, I didn't hear anything about him all week.
He finished 39th. He's played really bad on Saturday, but came back one under on Sunday. Start with Cameron Smith for me at 10-8. I mean, I don't really know how much I have to explain about him, but he did finish ninth here last year. He did miss two consecutive cuts before that. Obviously coming off the third place finish at the Masters and was first at the Players. And then Colin Morikawa, man, he finished fifth last week. He played solidly all week long. Nothing spectacular, but nothing above two over par, which I think was, you know, pretty about average or a little bit better on Saturday, especially. And showed some, you know, flashed some good form there. And he's had some success around here, finished seventh last year, 64th the year before. So those are my two guys I'd be focusing on above 10K.
Yeah, JT ranks first in my model. He should, because he's a great iron player. First in opportunities gained over the last 24 rounds in this field. Second in DK scoring. He just checks all the boxes if you want to pay up for it. I usually don't, because it comes down to the putter. If he gets hot with the putter, you're great. He had T8 here in 2020. It's pretty much the only time I've seen him play here. So it's intriguing with JT, the eighth at the Masters, third at the Valspar. He's coming in, obviously, in great form. So if you want to play JT, you can. But I'm with you. Cam Smith, I like quite a bit. And then my guy, I'd be willing to go back to DJ. I just think he's so close to breaking through. Back through, let me say that, because he has broke through before. But I think he's very, very close. We've seen it in recent events. You know, T12 last week, and it was because I think it was a bad Saturday he had. Because he was playing pretty good after the first day. T39 at the Valspar, T9 at the Players. Like, this is a guy that's played this pretty regularly. He's an RBC dude, 13th, 17th, 28th, 16th. And in those years, it feels like he's just kind of sleepwalking in those fields. Like, he just has to be here. I think he wants a W pretty bad. Like, that's just me. Maybe I'm overthinking it. But he's seeing, like, all these guys moving past him in the rankings and stuff. I think he wants to get back there. I think DJ, and I think you'll get him at lower ownership, because I think Cam Smith and Colin will get the love in this field. I guess it's Tuesday, so I can pull up early ownership here. We can actually have some fun with this.
DJ, while you're doing that, he hasn't won since the 2019 Masters, right?
Yeah, it's been a while. That's why I think he's starting to play better right now. So I
disagree with you.
I think it's one of those where he's close to getting it back, and it wouldn't shock me if a place like this, if he just gets that wedge game going, which we knew when he was on, that wedge game was like unbeatable. Yeah. So
well, this has got to be the longest drought of his career.
He had like one win a year for
10 straight years. Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is by far his longest drought. Last year, was the first year without one forever, and he's working that way again. I know it's only April, but the golfers keep getting better and better out there right now, so you better hurry up. But yeah, DJ is projected second lowest in this grouping, behind Cam Smith. They're both pretty close. Morikawa with a chalk in this range for now, but yeah, I think DJ would be kind of my, what I would say, sneaky play, but we'll see how that pans out.
Relatively sneaky, of course.
Yeah. For 10K and above, yes. Yeah. 9K range, Lowry 98, Connors 97, Berger 96, Fitz 95, Sungjae 93, Spieth 92, Neiman 91, Henley 9,000. If you don't want to play the 10K guys, there's plenty to like.
Yeah. I mean, I like a lot of guys in this range, obviously. Lowry, liked him last week, like him again this week. He finished ninth here last year, has a third place finish back in 2019, finished third last week at the Masters. Hasn't finished outside the top 15 in his last four starts. Feel like he's going to win sometime soon. And it seems to me like, you know, obviously a windier course on the, I guess it's pretty close to the coast anyways, isn't it? It's not
right on, it's pretty darn close. You have like lighthouses and ocean. So you're right next to the coast.
Corey Connors, 9,700. He's made his last two cuts here. Didn't miss three consecutive cuts before 2020, but finished fourth here last year. And, dude, I'm really salty that I didn't play more. I just feel like he was going to be too chalky last week.
That's one thing we didn't really hit on a lot is I think we need to realize with the Masters and the 90 golfer field where you can cut out almost 20 of them, just get cute like in one spot.
Yeah, I know, but like I hate to eat that low chalk. Like I don't care. Like if I'm like I played a lot of Cam Smith, didn't care what his ownership was, yeah. But like that lower chalk is what I feel like is better to fade, but not last week. Berger, four straight cuts, made cuts here in four attempts. Did finish third in 2020. Did make the cut last week. Did not play well at all whatsoever on the weekend. But. You know, I think this is a pretty good price for him. I'd rather, to be honest with you, have Berger than Connors. I think him and Lowry are about equal. Gonna need some crow on Matt Fitzpatrick. Mentioned last week that his cross-handed chipping would be an issue, but it apparently was not as he finished 14th, shot two under on Sunday there to finish 14th as chalk. And he hasn't missed a cut here in 4 years. I remember like probably 5-6 years ago, he mentioned that this is like his favorite place. His
favorite golf course, yeah. Yes.
And then he missed the cut that year. I think that was 2017, like was immediately cute. Missed the cut.
Classic.
Yeah. But since then has played better. I mean, you know, has finished inside the top 15 three out of 5 years. So pretty solid for Fitzpatrick there. Neiman, 9,100, finished fifth here in 2020. Made the cut last week, made the cut to Players. And then Russell Henley, man, another guy who didn't, he played well enough, finished 30th, basically mid-pack at the Masters last week. Hasn't missed a cut since the Open Championship back in July, finished ninth here last year. So there's a lot to like in this range. I've left out two guys, Sungjae Im and Jordan Spieth. If you want to play them, you can. I just like those other six better.
Those two are the lowest roster or projected ownership.
I mean, it makes sense.
Spieth is projected for less than 4% ownership, which is an interesting predicament to be in.
He hasn't missed a cut here in five tries.
Yeah, because everybody else, this is like the chalkiest range you'll find. It's like 16% or higher on everybody else in this range because like a lot of people are double dipping here.
And he wouldn't have missed a cut last week if it weren't for like basically about two holes.
Well, those two holes mattered.
Unfortunately.
But I'm with you. Lowry is one of my favorite plays this week. We've been playing him all the time. Now his price is up, and he ranks fifth in my model, seventh in the proximity I'm looking at, sixth in the par four range I'm looking at. I love Shane Lowry on this one. I'm with you. I think he's getting close to breaking through on the continental United States, let's put it that way, for Shane at 98. Connors is always in play for me on any event that's an approach game. Like, that's really – where it is, because with him, it's always about putting, and you can't predict that. But if you can predict approach game, I will say this much, though, if you're focusing on like 175 to 200, where a lot of the approaches are, he's 69th in this field, which if you think about it, ain't that great. So if you're trying to like talk yourself out of it, he's 87th in scrambling, 50th around the green. These are things that are important. He's played well here. He's made cuts here. But if he slips up a little bit, if you're trying to like just split hairs, you can go that route. I still like him, 22nd in my model, but it is interesting. Berger plays great on these short tracks in the Southeast, 18th in my model. He's first in scrambling in this field. So he can definitely benefit from situations like that. But I guess you have to scramble well when you're 75th in opportunities gained. So he's not giving himself chances. He has to scramble his butt to get those chances. So keep that in mind. I will be on a Fitz for sure. Like a Lowry Fitz start is just seems dreamy to me. It does to everybody else apparently too. But I like that one quite a bit, at least pieces of those two. Neiman is second in my model. He's really, really strong around the green. Great DK score, you know, 11th in par five. I think he's very interesting. I was surprised his roster rate was supposed to be that high, to be honest with you. And then Russell Henley, this is the one that really surprised me. Because out of all these names up here in the 9K range, he kind of stands out to me as like, maybe he shouldn't be up here range. But he's projected to be almost 17% owned, which is bonkers to me. But he's 14th in my model, first on approach, 5th in par 5s, 8th in opportunities gained, 4th in DK scoring all over the last 24 rounds. I like Russell Henley a lot this week, so I'm with you on this one. And it'll be fun to differentiate. Maybe just eat your chalk in your 9K and get different elsewhere, because you definitely can coming up. 8K range, you got Webb at 88, Horschel 87, Hatton 86, HV3 85, Siwoo Kim 84, Noren 83, Fleetwood 82, Kiz 81, and Kirk at 8,000. Where are you looking on this one?
Start up top there with Webb. You know, he played pretty well last week at, you know, at the Masters. He, you know, 35th, not terrible. He's not had a great year, but this is actually a place he's had a lot of success. 9th, 1st, 16th, 5th, 11th, going back to 2017. So all inside the top 16. And he's been playing better in the past, so take that for what it's worth. Billy Ho at 8,700. I mean, the reason I can't quit playing Billy Ho is because he's always underpriced. I mean, he's like the 13th ranked golfer in the world. And his course history is mixed here, 25th, miscut, 45th, 5th, miscut. So it's not great, but I mean, he's playing solid. He had a terrible fucking round on Saturday. I watched every shot, tilted every one of them. So at 8,700, I like him fine. Noren at 83, I think is okay. He's made, you know, he's 3 of 3 made cuts at this tournament. Fleetwood, he actually showed some really good form on Saturday where he shot 2 under, which was an incredible score last week. And so maybe he can get some momentum going, and that's it for me in this range.
Yeah, you got 4 or 5 guys under 10K in, or under 10% in this range. So this is where you can start getting a little different if you want to play some chalk above. But Billy Ho, I like quite a bit. I'm with you, and he just doesn't get the love, as you said. His proximity from 175 to 200, not ideal at 113th in this field, but overall we've seen how he's been playing, and he can get hot with that putter. So could be someone to definitely look at, but Hatton, I'm always just a sucker for, because when he runs hot, he runs really hot. Otherwise, he just his head explodes, one of the two. And he makes for a great tournament play, in my opinion. HP3 is 9th in my model, which is was quite surprising, but really good around the green, really good in opportunities gained, good in proximity, and coming in pretty good form. You mentioned his good week at the Masters, finished 2nd here last year after 3 straight missed cuts. So that could be a fun one there with HP3. Siwoo Kim, Pete Dye course. It's almost say like he just every time he rates out poorly, play him on a Pete Dye course, he figures it out. So do what you want to do. But you mentioned him and one of my favorite pivots in this range, but sadly everybody else is. He's almost 15% projected ownership. Is Alexander Noren. Like this is a dude that just continues to play very, very well recently. 12th on the at the Valspar, 26th at the Players. He obviously didn't qualify for the Masters, but you know, 17th in my model, 7th in par 5 scoring, a great scrambler, really good DK score. I think there's a lot to like with Noren in that range. I like Kiz at a Pete Dye course. I like all these guys in this range. I guess this is what really sucks. Like, it's a really, really good range to pick and choose from, but they all rate out pretty well. I will say Chris Kirk is 6th in my model. So he's one of the better approach players on tour, great around the green. and he's a fourth in opportunities gained. That's due to his approach game. Like, his iron play is very, very strong with Chris Kirk. So that could be someone you could take a peek at. But about 12%, it's not too bad. But most of the guys are 10% and below if you're not named Noren or Kirk. So keep that in mind. If you like some guys here, go for it. 75 to 79, you got Kokrak, McNeely, Nah, Cooch, Pereira, Harmon, Hoagie, Hadwin, Poulter, Young, Streelman. Again, another great group of options here.
Yeah. McNeely is one of my favorite plays. Two straight made cuts here. Finished fourth last year, and hasn't missed a cut on tour since the Shriners back in October. Been playing really solid golf. Kuchar flashed some pretty good form where he finished second at the Texas Open. And he's getting back to a place here that he knows very well, played it a lot. I think he's a past champion here. I'm only going back to 2015, but I'm pretty sure that he's won this tournament before. I think he won it the year that my dad, like, all of a sudden just out of nowhere had a stray dog, and so my dad named the dog Cooch, if I remember correctly.
Hopefully he treats the dog better than Cooch treats the caddy.
Yeah, he did, and then the dog died. But well, I mean, it's not my dog. Anyways, hasn't missed a cut here since 2015. Very solid. I like Cooch quite a bit this week. Kevin Na, man, I watched a lot of his shots last week as well because I had him on a team that had a chance. And of course, when Cam Smith kind of fell apart, so did the team. But shot 69 on Sunday at the Masters. He played really well from after basically on approach and in, right? His wedges were on point is what I'm trying to get at. Like him quite a bit. Harmon, 7,700, two straight made cuts here. He's finished 13th and 28th in the last 2 years. He is coming off a miscut at the Masters. I think he missed it on the number. Yep. He shot 5 over for the week and the cut was 4, but was playing, you know, decently solid golf before that. And then last but not least, Streelman at 7,500. Course history is pretty good. 33rd, did miss the cut in 2020, but 6th, 7th, 55th, 53rd, 3rd, and has made 3 straight cuts on tour, including a 7th place finish at the Valspar a couple weeks ago. So,
yeah, it's a fun group. I like McNeely as well. A lot of people do, looking at ownership, so that's one to keep in mind. But Na is a peak die guy, and if you just look at stats, he does not rate out well here. But when you look at current form and just past history here, he's a great GPP play. You know, miscut T10, miscut T39. So you know how Kevin Na rolls. But I do like Brian Harmon quite a bit. You mentioned him at 7,700. He does like Pete Dye courses. Coming in really good form. Great course history here with Harmon. 32nd on model. He's first in par fours, 4 to 450. So that's pretty strong. Plus does really well at the par fives. So I think Harmon is very, very much in play for us this week. I will sprinkle some Kuchar just because of what we're seeing and how he's played at this course. Not as much as I would have in years past, but at like a 20 max, I'll probably have like 3 or 4 lineups with Cooch just because he is looking like he might be rounding into a little bit of form, which is quite doable in this course. But Tom Hoagie's 10th in my model. If like you think is a lot of like short course, small greens, ocean, pebble type feels. Not saying it's identical, but there's similarities. The approach game is what's important to pebble. Small greens. Well, Hoagie just won there. He's first in proximity, 175 to 200. 9th in opportunities gained. 9th in approach. He's 10th in my model. He's at $7,600. He'd be one guy I'd look at. Then Adam Hadwin is 3rd in my model, 8th in the proximity I'm looking to target. And he's just overall playing some pretty strong golf.
Three straight top tens.
T4 at the Valero, T7 at the Valspar, T9 at the Players. And at this event, missed cut last year, but they made at least 3 cuts in a row. Hadwin's intriguing, very, very intriguing at $7,600.
What's his ownership looking like?
That's a great question. Let me check for you here. 17.5% chalk. Him and Hoagie, of course, they rate out well. This is what happens when you use Fantasy National and the ratings are good. Everybody plays them. Yeah. We'll see if that's how it works, though. Lately, it has been an opposite trend. Everyone sees that and backs it down, and you'll get him at, like, say, 11% or something.
I got you. All right.
So we'll see how that pans out, but it's hard to ignore how well he's playing. I think now the question, would you rather Hoagie or Hadwin?
I mean, I'd probably go, yeah, that's tough. I mean, Hoagie coming off last week, I'd probably go Hadwin. Just week of rest, 3 straight top tens is pretty solid.
Well, they have shown like the past like X amount of winners played the Masters the week before. So
no shit.
Yeah, I actually, I saved the tweet. If you give me a great radio here for like 2 seconds, I will look this up right here. And is that the one? No, RBC Trends. The winner of the RBC Heritage played in the Masters in 6 of the last 8 runnings of this event. 3 of the last 6 winners missed cut at Augusta. 8 of the last 11 winners had recorded a top 25 finish at Harbortown before winning. 2 of the last 5 winners are first timers. So 6 of the 8 last winners at this event played the Masters the week before.
So, well, there you go.
Yeah, something to think about.
Yeah.
All sure. right, 7K to 7,400. Who are you liking in this range?
For Telly, 7,400. Texas dude, so pretty good win players. Made 3 straight cuts at this event. Did finish 8th in 2020. Coming off a solid week at the Texas Open where he finished 8th. Hasn't missed a cut since the Phoenix Open back in February. I'm going to go back to Van Ruyen. I liked him a lot last week. And part of that was kind of just his – I felt like he was going to have a good draw because he was, the second group out on Friday. So I thought the winds were going to be, like, basically the lightest for the first at least few holes and maybe give him a little bit of an advantage. But it did not fucking matter after he, like, I think made an 8 or something on 15. It was just a trunk slam and a half coming home. But I think going back to him is fine. He's actually, I think, got some decent course history around here. Let me check that again real quick. Yeah, I mean, 1 start, finished 21st back in 2020. Aaron Wise at 7,100. My model likes him. He's got 2 consecutive missed cuts at this event and is coming off a missed cut at the Valspar. I'd rather go with Charles Howell III. He's played this a lot. Finished 18th last year. Did miss 2 consecutive cuts before that. But it's coming off a 4th place finish at the Texas Open. And that's it for me above 7K there.
Yeah, Ed Fratelli as well. I like the form he's coming in with and the history here. So he'd be a guy I'd look at a 74. Russell Knox, as long as it's an approach event, I'm going to keep looking at Rusty. That's $7,300. Scrambling is pretty bad. Pretty bad is the best way I'll put it. But he gets the job done on the approach game and the par fours we're looking to target. JJ Spahn keeps getting it done. I'm ready for him to wear down and get tired, but he's on to something right now. So if you want to get JJ at 73 or Sebastian Munoz in a GPP at 73, Munoz ranks 13th in my model. He's 5th in the proximity 175 to 200, 11th in opportunities gained. Just got a putt for Sebastian. So keep him in mind at 73. And then one of the ones that really shocks me, but if you're looking at past event history, the gloves made 4 of the last 5 cuts here, finished anywhere from 21st to 33rd. For Mr. Lucas Glover, T30 at the Masters, T18 at Valero. So coming in pretty decent form. Usually get him at some low ownership. So Glover at 72 would be one I look at. Denny McCarthy as well at 72. Plays pretty darn well at this event. T13 last year, missed cut T33. So I'll take that kind of chances. I think he's made like 8 of his last 9 cuts as well. So he's $7,200. You know, other than that, like for GPPs, I wouldn't mind sprinkling Lahiri and Kazire, and I like your Hal call and CT Pan. Those are guys like I'm not going heavy on, but Pan's a past winner. Hal's playing really well, especially on these shorter courses. So in tournaments, I don't mind sprinkling some of these guys in there and seeing where it takes me. 6K range, who you liking?
There's some guys down here. Doug Gim at 6,900, finished 33rd here last year, but is coming off a missed cut at the Texas Open. Finished 6th at the Players' Championship and had 3 consecutive missed cuts before that. So best of luck if you play him. Brendan Todd is a guy who I feel like might potentially, this place would suit him. His course history doesn't really necessarily say so. He did finish 4th here in 2015. But after that, missed 2 consecutive cuts. Did make the cut last year, finished 39th. He's coming off an 8th place finish at the Texas Open right after he missed 2 consecutive cuts. Joel Dahman, 6,800. 2 for 2 made cuts here. Coming off a WD at the over in, I think, the Dominican Republic, that opposite field event of the match shits. Play. Yes. Yeah. Montezuma's Revenge or whatever they call it in the DR. But 6,800, I think he's fine. And then the model likes Sadashi Kodaira.
He's won here before.
He has. He won here in 2018, finished 70th the year after that, and missed the cut in last year. So to come off a 30th place finish at his last start was Puerto Rico, which was almost a month ago. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Probably corn fairing it or something.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, other guys down here, like Sam Ryder, Adam Long's been playing decent. Pat Perez, you know, at that price for Pat Perez, I would definitely worth, I mean, he's been around here a lot of times. He's missed his last two cuts at this event, but had made a bunch in a row and did have a top 10 a few years back. So, yeah, I mean, it starts getting a little sketch down here.
But yeah, it definitely does. But a couple guys that I like, I'm going to start backwards up. Wes Bryan at 6,100, 15th at Punta Cana, 62nd at Valspar, and most importantly, T25, T68, T42 on a victory here. He plays pretty darn well at this golf course. Duncan's another guy at 62 you can look at. Had good history here and coming in with a couple decent finishes. He missed the cut at the Valero, but T28 at Punta Cana, T25 at Valspar. So I don't mind a little T-dunks at 62. But if you're sliding up, I think you mentioned Michael Thompson. He made four straight cuts here, including an 8th and a 10th and 20 in 2019. So he could be a guy to look at in past history. Matt Neesmith back-to-back made cuts here. We know he can get hot with the putter just a few weeks ago. He did just that. When you look at Neesmith, let me slide up here. Missed cut at Valero, but T3 at the Valspar. So he ran hot at Valspar. As someone you can look at, I believe you mentioned Nate Lashley as well at 67. Coming in good form. Only played here once, missed the cut in 2020, but good form. Brian Stewart's one. He's made many cuts in a row here, including a T18 last year, T16 in 2019. But you look at his recent form, and it makes you kind of wishing that this might not be the best of ideas. But if you're just going to course history, like missed cut at Valero, T7 at Punta Cana, T16 at Valspar for Stewart. Could be worse, let's put it that way. Cam Davis is another one. If you want to go boomer bust and GPPs, he actually plays better on short courses, which is funny to see. And then other than that, like you mentioned Dahman, and there's Gim and Bo Hostler. Like, it's a fun tournament range. No one I'm in love with, but very interesting tournament range in the 6K range. All right, let's recap things real quick. Jesse, 10K and above, who's your number one play?
I'm going to say Cam Smith. You've talked me into DJ, though. I like your DJ call.
I'm going to go DJ. I love Cam Smith. I'll always love Cam Smith, but I'm going to go DJ. This might be a fun week or a tilting week. We shall see, but that's golf. 9K range.
Lowry.
Yeah, that's probably the play. I'll go Fitzpatrick, of course. But, you know, are you going to play any Spieth at 4%?
I mean,
dude can win. We know that. It's ugly right now. It's ugly. Yeah. I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Well, I mean, like I said, he had like two bad holes last week that prevented him from playing the weekend. But it's not been, it's not been great since Pebble Beach.
Yeah, it's true. 8K range.
Horschel.
Take your boy. There you go. This is one's tough for me because I'll say Norin, but there's some good Pete Dye specialists in this range, let's put it that way. 75 to 79.
I love Matt McNeely. What do you have on projected ownership for him at the moment?
I'm pretty sure he's going to be popular because Mayo talked him up like it was going out of style. Mm-hmm. Only 12%. I thought it'd be worse. Hadwin and Hoagie are, you know, Hoagie's 15, Hadwin's 17.5.
Yeah.
Okay, so McNeely. I'll go Brian Harman. I'll go Brian Harman to avoid the chalk, but I will have Hoagie and Hadwin in lineups. I'm not going to act like I'm not going to. 7K to 74.
Charles Howell.
That's a sneaky fun one. I'll go the glove. Give me Lucas Glover. And 6K, who you got?
I'm going to say Brendan Todd.
I think I'm going to say Joel Dahman, but I know I'm going to have some of these cheapies down here because that way you can play some more starsy scrubsies. Because, again, this thing has 140 golfers, give or take. And T65 and ties. So about half the field is going to make this thing. So keep that in mind as well. Everybody's in play when it's a short course. So you don't have to like just start crossing guys off the list. Like even Pat Perez, I need to dig into more. Honestly, I didn't even realize he was in the field when I was, you know, starring my guys here because he didn't rate out well. But, you know, he's 75th in my model, but like he's 20th around the green, 20th on par fives. He's just been atrocious on these distances for par fours and the proximity range. But he's been playing some pretty good golf. So that's interesting. When the stats don't match the production, it's always tricky. But that's how you can also make things. Everyone's using these models now, so that's how you can differentiate as well. So any final thoughts for Harbortown RBC Heritage?
I don't much more than you want to do some winners.
Oh, God, yes, my bad.
Or,
I got DK
or cash Sports game plays or GPP.
Yeah, God, I totally zoned out there. Thank you. This is why Jesse's here to keep me in line. If you're starting out a cash game this week, Jesse, who are three guys you'd like to start out a cash game with?
The funny thing is I already had it lined out, and then you just want to skip to the end. I got Fitzpatrick, Kuchar, and Hadwin.
That's a good one. Fitzpatrick's a very good one. Let me see. I'll go Henley, Horschel, and I'll go Kuchar. That's a good one. Kuchar is a tough one. And Cash, tough to pass on that one. GPP play, three guys. Who are you going?
Horschel, Howell, and Russell Henley.
That's a good one. I'll go DJ, Kisner, Brian Harman. We'll go with those. And then if we're playing some betting here, fun stuff, who you pick to win, DK Sportsbook, we have some fun odds here. Like, I laughed when someone posted these the other day, when DJ has the same odds as Fitzpatrick, Lowry, and Berger. Yeah. Makes me kind of question things, but who you got this week?
Yeah, I mean, DJ at 18 is bettable in this field, especially. But kind of longer shots. Neiman at 35, Kevin Na at 50, McNeely at 55, and then Harman at 100.
I like Kiz at 55 because this is definitely a Kiz-type course. So that one is intriguing. Not just my homerism coming out there. You know, Hoagie at least a plus 700 to top 10 is interesting. This, what's his top 20? I wish that was on the same page as this. So I have to keep going back and forth. But Hoagie. Plus 275 to T20. Yeah. I kind of like that for Hoagie in this event. Like, if you don't want to play him in DK because of the ownership, you can switch over there and have some fun. And then I think if you're going like a long shot, which I don't think we're going to see this week, but you could. We've seen it with Kadire and Wesley Bryan and all these dudes. This does feel like a place that Joel Dahlman can be very successful at. Very successful. Short course, ocean course, plus 180 at worst. Let's see what a plus top 20 Dahlman gets you. Plus 550 to T20. Sounds a little fun for Joel Dahlman. So that'd be something I'd be keeping in mind at least. But all right, now we have finished everything on the show. Any final thoughts for the RBC Heritage?
I don't. It'll be fun. It's a fun golf course and fun week, but it's not last week, so it's a bit of a letdown.
That's the problem. Like, I wish they had the Zurich this week so we could just have like that breather of a week and then go back. So I think this is a great golf course and a really fun tournament. You get a cool red plaid jacket when you win. So it's a cool course, and I hope people enjoy it, but obviously it ain't Augusta. So we'll see how that plays out. But with a loaded field like this, 20 maxing, 115, whatever you're going to do, multi-entering is fun because there's a lot of ways to go. I guess one thing I'd say is if you do like the chalk guys stay in the 9 and 10K ranges, do the core cascade this week. Make five guys and then pepper the 8. The 8K range is very low-owned for the most part, and then you get just 7K is the same. So then you just leave like two spots and mix and match your 8 and 7K guys and go that route. But do what makes you happy. Play some DFS and enjoy yourself. And most importantly, go to the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast on iTunes and give it a rate and review, or subscribe to the Fantasy Degens YouTube. Catch all the good stuff there as well. But until next time, you can find Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. I'm at BD Entrick. This was your RBC Heritage preview. Catch you guys next time.